locked on The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon. Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Welcome back to the program. Inside hour number two, we're live in the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. Been talking about this for a little while, but coming up next week, we'll have full details and registration likely to be open next week. Is mark your calendars for August 13th at Optimist Athletic Park, because we will be hosting our first ever Sportsnet 960 slow pitch tournament. We want you to be a part of it. You got some buddies. You got a slow pitch team right now. It will be co-ed. So I want to make that perfectly clear. We haven't mentioned that already today, but it will be a co-ed tournament. So if you want to get involved, be listening next week. Full details on the first ever Sportsnet 960 slow pitch tournament coming next week. It'll be held August 13th at Optimist Athletic Park. And looking forward to being a part of it, and looking forward to seeing all of you out there, as nothing is better than getting your buddies together for a one-day slow pitch tournament. I've never asked you this. Will Nault, Logan Gordon along with you. Big Show's in at hour number two. Are you a big slow pitch guy, Logan? Are you a big big fan of slow pitch and sitting around drinking some beers and hitting some baseballs with your buddies?
I am. Obviously, we haven't done enough of it the last couple of years, and it'll be nice to jump back into that world a bit, whether it's 960 related or otherwise over the summer. But yeah, I'm always down for a good slow pitch game. It's been a while though.
Well, hopefully we'll see you out there in the dung tank. I know that perhaps you're going to be
singing the national anthem.
Be involved. That's
what,
right.
You've been singing.
Also, be selling beer. I understand that'll be you.
Drinking beer.
Beer, hot dogs.
Drinking beer and eating hot dogs, actually.
It'll be you.
That's my plan.
We're looking forward to it. We'll have full details coming up for you as early as next week. So be listening in to the various programs, as we'll let you know how you can get involved in the first ever slow pitch tournament with Sportsnet 960, August 13th at Optimist Athletic Park.
Week three, the CFL kicked off last night, Will, in Montreal, and it was a beatdown for the Alouettes over the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
So you're telling me Mr. Stern finally got one right,
Gary,
eh?
Gary Stern, attaboy. You backed your boys, and they rewarded you. To say this one was over from the start, probably fair. Chandler Worthy with an 88-yard kickoff return touchdown put the Riders in a hole to start this one. David Cote adds a couple field goals. Then Julian Grant, a 70-yard touchdown pass from Trevor Harris in the second quarter. We had a pick six in the third quarter. Another couple of field goals from Cote. The Riders made it a little bit closer on the scoreboard last night with a late Duke Williams touchdown, Will. But this was, by all accounts, a beatdown that not a lot of people saw coming after an 0-2 start from Montreal and a 2-0 start for the Riders. Now, before you text in at 960-960, and I know there are plenty of green and white supporters in this city, yes, it was a short week for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders with significant travel into Montreal, but even with that factor, to see Cody Fajardo at 17 of 28, 191 yards, two touchdowns, to get out-dueled by Trevor Harris surprised me, and man, did it look like that Saskatchewan offensive line and offense as a whole, Will, was missing Dan Clark, because Cody Fajardo was on the run.
Yeah, the absence of Dan Clark, I think, was certainly evident in that game, and you're right. I mean, I think for all intents and purposes, this was a beatdown. The late touchdown, I think, makes this thing a little bit more, I would say, looks better for the Riders, but even with the late touchdown, 37-13 doesn't look good, but it was 37-6 into the final couple minutes of the game. So a lot of kudos to Montreal. We joke,
8 sacks too for Montreal.
It's crazy what the Owls did as they dominated their home opener. And you like to see it for a Montreal team that suffered really close back-to-back losses to begin the season. We've talked a lot about the pressure that Kahari Jones is under, not being Danny Machocha's guy. Maybe this builds him a little bit more cushion, but Trevor Harris was great in the game, 16 of 22 for 262 yards and a touchdown, his first start of the year. If you're Kari Jones, you probably got to stick with him at least for the time being.
You'd think so, right?
You know, that certainly eliminates that conversation, at least for now. And, yeah, I mean, the Riders score a late touchdown to make it 37-13, but it was 37-6 for all intents and purposes. And again, 23-3 at the half. It was a beatdown. And hats off to Montreal because they needed that win, especially with the East Division being what it is. Still early in the year, Logan, but you can't afford to fall down too far. And going to 0-3 is not going to put you in a great spot. And, you know, we joke about the crossover, and there's still a lot of season to be played, but you at least want to give yourself a chance to host a playoff game. And you know, being one of those two seeds, it would be the great opportunity for that. And, you know, we'll see what happens to Toronto in their second game of the year on Saturday night in Vancouver. But, yeah, great way to start the week if you're Montreal. And now they've got a little bit of time to sit before they get back on the field in week
Sask.
Number four.
Yeah.
So rematch of sorts, but you know, both teams will have a long week. They will not play until next Saturday back in Regina. But yeah, we've talked a lot about back to back, and you know, playing the opponent in consecutive weeks is never an easy thing in football, and could look a lot different next Saturday. But for now, hats off to Montreal, a great win as they dominate the Riders.
Week three continues tonight with a 6:30 kickoff from IG Field in Winnipeg. It is a rematch of the last two Grey Cups to be played, Will, the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Hamilton, of course, after a disappointing loss to the Calgary Stampeders in overtime last Saturday, a loss in week one to Sask where they got outscored 30-13. Now you have to walk in to Winnipeg against the two-time defending champions on their home field, looking to avoid going 0-3 on the season. This is a big spot for Orlando Steinhauer's group in Hamilton. And look, you shouldn't need any more motivation than going up against the group that's ended your season short of a Grey Cup 2 years in a row.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in terms of this matchup, even if you include the regular season and those great cups, it's been dominated by Winnipeg for a little while here, and I think Hamilton would love to get one up on Winnipeg. And funny enough, it's the CFL, and the first place we're going to go is talk about quarterbacks. Talked about it yesterday with Justin Dunk, but if you're Dane Evans, you got to find a way to keep control of that football. 7 turnovers in 2 games, including 4 interceptions. He's lost 3 fumbles. He's got 4 fumbles, but you know, he's able to get one back, but he's lost 3 fumbles. He's thrown 4 picks. I don't care how good your team is around the quarterback. If you're turning the football over that frequently, you're going to lose more often than you're going to win. So Winnipeg, probably not a good spot to be in terms of, you know, they're a 2-0 team, and they probably feel like they haven't played their best football yet. As Justin Dunk told us yesterday, you know, they're probably a team that's looking at it and say, we played 2 B games, but got away with both of them and won both of them. So if you're Hamilton, you're like, oh, boy, we're going to play a team that's pissed off. They want to be better. And yet here we are just trying to get our first win. So it should be fun. I think a little bit of a desperation on both sides. And certainly when you've played a team that often and you play them in big moments, such as a Grey Cup in back-to-back years, I know that the rosters necessarily don't look the same, Logan. But there's a bit of a built-in hatred, I would think, and should be a fun one, I would imagine, kind of full of a little bit of juice and some P&V, as they say tonight in Winnipeg. I think it should be a fantastic game.
Well, let's be honest, you're pretty pissed off if you're a Hamilton fan and your team doesn't walk into this with a little bit of chip on their shoulder. I know, yeah. I think just as a sports fan, you would hope, you look, regardless of the rosters being the same or not, it's a pretty similar group that's, you know, taken away your Grey Cup dreams twice in a row.
Yep.
And you have every reason to go in there tonight and try to get your season back on track. And yeah, is it, you know, the same revenge as winning a Grey Cup? No, but it's a form of revenge. And I'm sure Dane Evans and company would like to walk in there and, you know, end that perfect record to start the season for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
And as much as we talk about Dane Evans, keep an eye on Simone Lawrence as well. Jeff Reinbold, the former coach of the Hamilton Ticats, still calling out some of his former players, including Simone Lawrence, after a lackluster start to the year, he made an appearance on Rod Peterson's show from his house in Hawaii just to explain how important the game is. And, you know, he called out Simone Lawrence top and front and center. And, you know, a guy that, you know, has been a nominee three times in his career for most outstanding defensive player. Got to look for those veterans to kind of lead your team out of an 0-2 or possibly an 0-3 hole. So look for Simone Lawrence to perhaps make an impact in this game tonight.
And, of course, the team that we focus on most here, the Calgary Stampeders, they released their depth chart ahead of their game against the Edmonton Elks tomorrow, part of a doubleheader to end off the CFL week. 5 o'clock, Elks, Stampeders. 8 o'clock, Argonauts in BC, getting set to take on the Lions. And a couple of things to discuss with this depth chart, Will. Of course, top of mind is Bo Levi Mitchell, who is listed as a starter for the Stampeders, but with the game time decision designation beside his name. That's a big one for the Stamps. Bo talked after walkthrough today, and I'm sure you'll hear more during the football hour with Matt and Pat a little bit later on today, that he's trying to do what's best for the team, and it feels as though as if his ankle isn't at full mobility, he might be hampering the team not having enough mobility to get around the pocket. So they're going to monitor that and see what happens. Jake Mayer will get the start if Bo is unable to. Earlier in the week, he took some first-team reps, so he's a little bit more up to speed should he need to get in there, Will. But obviously, with the Stampeders, you're a bit concerned early on this season. Bo's had some significant injuries over the last couple of seasons, and to start this year, dealing with one from week one that could hamper his status ahead of week three.
Yeah, and I think it's related to that right foot injury he suffered in the first week of the season. I know that he was able to fight his way back and play very, very well in week two against Hamilton. But at the same time, I know that he's your guy, and we've talked a lot about Dave Dickinson's decision at the half of last week's game to keep Bo in there. Obviously, gets rewarded. Bo has a great second half. They come from behind to complete the comeback and win over Hamilton in overtime. But this early in the year, and for all of the question marks and concerns about injuries in the past with Bo, I do wonder, Logan, if it's worth it to just sit him out. I mean, even if you're feeling about 80%, it's game three of an 18-game season, and if you're Calgary, you're hoping to play into late November again, which is something you haven't done in a couple of seasons. I think you'd be wise to maybe give it some thought, and certainly wouldn't hurt to sit Bo out this early in the year to allow him to at least be in a spot where you can continue to be at full health. And this is also by keeping in mind that the Calgary Stampeders have a bye week in week four. So if you don't play him in this game today, you got a real opportunity to allow Bo to get back up to full speed. This is by no means saying that you showed that he's still your guy last week by sticking with him and getting that comfort behind victory. So it's no slight at Bo. In fact, it's further, I think, encouragement and support and confidence to say, you're our guy. We don't want to risk you in week three of what we hope is a very long season. Get back to full health. If he doesn't play in this game tomorrow night, he is going to be not back in action until July 7th. When the Stampeders visit Edmonton. I really, really strongly would be encouraging it and giving it some thought, especially if Bo's like, you know what? Yeah, I can play, but I'm only about 80 to 85%. And even if he does play, knowing you have a bye of that, you can use it the same way that if he plays, he still would be off until July 7th. But I just think it would be beneficial to you, especially with all the injuries he's had the last handful of seasons, to just sit back and say, let's really get you back to full speed. Let's not risk it in week three of an extremely long year.
Yeah, it certainly adds to the intrigue factor having that early season bye week coming. And, you know, the nice thing is you're kind of ahead of other teams when it comes to your backup quarterback situation. Jake Mayer's already come in this season, looked very good against Montreal in week one, leading Calgary to that game-winning drive that led to the game-winning field goal from Rene Paredes. That's big, so I don't think it's a massive drop-off if they do decide to go to Jake Mayer. I think it'll be something to watch for sure, as we head into tomorrow and get closer. And, yeah, maybe time to take advantage of your early season bye there and make sure that your number one guy is ready to go against Edmonton in 2 weeks' time, because it's a rematch. And hey, maybe there's something even to be said strategy-wise, Will, about throwing a different guy at Edmonton. They don't have as much film on Jake Mayer, and they'll have to maybe face Bo in 2 weeks at full health. So we'll see what the Stampeders do at the quarterback position. Also of note, some changes in the secondary for the Stampeders. No Trey Roberson. He is out for this game against the Elks, and that's a big loss, Will. Not only is Trey Roberson one of, if not the top shutdown cornerbacks in the entire Canadian Football League, but the one thing the Elks have been able to do pretty successfully this season is move the ball through the air. Nick Arbuckle creating a pretty good rapport with top free agent signing Kenny Lawler, and Darrell Walker is back in the Elks lineup. So the Stamps moving some things around in the secondary. Newly signed DB Tremaine Washington, he will get a start for the Stampeders against his old team. Not to mention Jonathan Moxie, he's also back in the lineup. That allows them to shift Raheem Wilson to safety and put Titus Wall at Sam linebacker. Of course, Titus Wall with an outstanding game as part of that comeback against the Hamilton Tiger Cats. And this is going to be a big one for the Stamps in that secondary to deal with what the Elks have been able to do offensively, at least when it comes to moving the ball through the air.
Yeah, and you've mentioned Kenny Lawler a lot. I know that Nick Arbuckle's only got the one touchdown to five interceptions, and maybe this defensive backfield can take advantage and continue to, maybe even make that interception number higher for Arbuckle. But, you know, there's no question. Darrell Walker's been battling some injury issues here early in the year, but this is an Edmonton team that still has some pretty dangerous weapons offensively, and it'll be interesting to see how Calgary's backfield does, as there's been a little bit of shifting, as you mentioned. But yeah, there's no question that Kenny Lawler is going to be front and center for Calgary's game plan here, because he's been unbelievable in the first two games, despite the 0-2 record for the Edmonton Elks.
Yeah, two games in, he's second in the league in receiving yards, only behind Eugene Lewis, who has an extra game on him after playing last night against the Riders. 221 receiving yards on 17 receptions to go along with one touchdown. And we talked a lot about Kenny Lawler in the offseason, Will, and the money that the Elks were willing to throw at him and whether that was going to be a wise investment or not. So far, so good. I was critical of it at the time. I didn't know if spending that sort of money on a number one option made sense for Edmonton. But Kenny Lawler's proved a lot of people wrong early on, and they're going to need that to continue, because there hasn't been a lot going right for the Elks other than that. Defensively, got a lot of questions about the Elks as well. Can they stop anybody in this league in a critical time? I'm not 100% sure on that, but it certainly helps things when, you know, the number one guy that you made a priority in the offseason gets off to the kind of start that Kenny Lawler has.
He's been unbelievable.
Really and, good.
You know, when you get paid that kind of money, sometimes it's easy to be overly critical. But
just cash the checks, baby, right?
He's not allowed anyone to be critical of him. That's how good he's been, and it's been fun to watch. You wondered how he would look away from Winnipeg, but hasn't missed a beat in Edmonton, and certainly the early season chemistry very evident between him and Nick Arbuckle, and we'll see what happens Saturday in Calgary.
And last note I wanted to pass along here ahead of this Stamps game on Saturday. Exciting. We talked to him after the draft, and it'll be a very cool day for the Philpott family as Jalen Philpott, the Stampeders' first round pick in this year's draft at fifth overall, will get to make his Calgary Stampeders debut at wide receiver. He'll be second on the depth chart at that wide receiver spot behind Richie Sindani, but still, after starting the season injured, not getting a chance to play against his brother Tyson and the Montreal Alouettes in week one, Jalen healthy and ready to go for the Stampeders. Will, I'm very excited to see what he can do, and of course the UFC product in familiar territory at McMahon Stadium should be a great day for Jalen and his family on Saturday.
I'm not sure if you saw, and we didn't mention it earlier when talking about the kickoff game to week three, but Tyson making a 66-yard catch in that game.
Yes, so he had some explosiveness on that play, and you can start to see why those Philpott brothers were so highly sought after in the draft, and Jalen the higher drafted of the two, and we haven't had a chance to see what he's going to do for that Stampeders offense yet. I'm excited for it.
And as you mentioned, behind Sindani, so maybe a slow burn to seeing what he can do, and certainly not putting a lot of expectation on him early, but we'll see what the other twin can do in his first CFL action on Saturday.
5 o'clock kickoff from McMahon, CalgaryStampeders.com if you're looking for tickets. Looks like the weather is going to be excellent for a Saturday kickoff. Week three in the CFL ends off with the Argonauts and the BC Lions, 8 o'clock Saturday night from BC. What can Nathan Rourke and the Lions do for a curtain call, Will, after a dominant week one against the Elks, where even if the highest expectations for Nathan Rourke and that team came out ahead of the season, I don't know that anybody expected them to pump Edmonton like they did. Then you have it's kind of tough because you have that early season bye. You probably didn't want it if you were BC after how well your offense played in week one. Probably wanted to play last week and continue that momentum, but instead you have the time off. You're at home again to take on the Argos, who are also only one game into the season. I'm excited for that back half of the doubleheader, too, to see what Nathan Rourke and company have in store.
Yeah, I think you can make an argument both ways. Like, is this a guy that, you know, if you're BC, did you want to get right back at it in week two, or was it a good time to allow everybody to kind of sit back, watch a lot of film, continue to, you know, make some slight adjustments and get that much better, because you really couldn't play the sport better than what they did in week one. They pounded the Elks. You had three incompletions in that game. So I think you can look at it both ways, but obviously if you're BC, you're going to talk optimistically about the fact that, yeah, you know what, we like that we had a bye week in week two, and we're getting set here for week three.
What do we got coming up next on the program?
Well, of course, he's the man, the myth, the legend. Didn't join us on Thursday, where he usually does. He's been busy. Apparently had one hockey shift at the NHL Network all month, and it was yesterday. So we'll talk about that and more with our man and friend of the program. Friend of yours, friend of ours. He is Adnan Virk. He joins us next. Hour two rolls on. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
This is The Big Show with Will Nault and Logan Gordon on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Hour two rolls on. Happy Friday back inside the Sportsnet 960 downtown studio. My name is Will Nault alongside Logan Gordon. Don't forget you can find The Big Show wherever you get your podcasts, Spotify, Apple, Google, and Amazon. Subscribe to The Big Show right now. Never miss a moment or a guest like our very next guest down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. We go. Look what the cat dragged in. Another Friday edition of our Life Insider, Adnan Virk. You like the Fridays now better. Is that what the deal is here? What's going on?
Well, yeah, you're right. Well, I'm at the mercy of the company. Working a little hockey last night. Me and Ken Danico, Mr. Devil. Guy's unbelievable. He was a proud Canadian from Alberta. He's telling me the story about he went to Moncton, New Brunswick last weekend for a charity tournament. Some old players, even before your time and my time, Dave Babich, getting a little love. Wendell Clark, he said, was great. Paul Coffey, unbelievable still. And he said, Chris Neal of the Senators, remember the big tough
shout
guy?
Out.
He said, Chris Neal, Chris Neal came up to him and said, you and I have the distinction, I can't remember the exact stat, the only two players in hockey history, I believe, to have played X amount of seasons and racked up 2,500 penalty minutes with the same team. Unbelievable. Chris Neal and Ken Danico, who knew?
Yeah, crazy. KD, Kraft Dinner, Lifetime Supply, maybe? Is that the deal? It'd be good sponsorship.
Kraft Dinner.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kraft Dinner, very strong. There's no question about it. I was just happy. We did a little rink demo for our friends at Bauer.
Oh.
So I had to put on the gloves and the stick. Sadly, not on skates. If we could have found some skates here in Secaucus, New Jersey, and actually, found a rink, would have been amazing. We did a little demo. Demo short in the business for demonstration. So Dana was breaking down Kale McCarr, which, as he was joking, we love Ken Danico. He wasn't exactly Cale McCarr when he was on the ice, but he was doing some of the moves. But of course, I had to be the dummy. Like, I was the defenseman, biting on the fakes from Cale McCarr. Really good demo. I'll tune it out for you. You're going to love it. Our friends at Bauer loved it.
Love it. I love it. And yeah, no offense to Ken Danico, but not really the comparable I would make between the two. I mean, it's one very different player, very different styles between Cale McCarr and Ken Danico. But that's outstanding. And as you texted me yesterday, that was your lone NHL shift in the month of June, Adnan.
Yeah, I remember we were talking last week, how much hockey you'd be able to watch. And I remember game one, I was working doing baseball. Game two, I was driving. So I was listening to that, although that was a disaster. And not that I care who wins, I just want to close games. 7-0 is atrocious. Game three, I actually watched quite a bit of, and that was a contender route, this time for Tampa. And then game four, I was working, and I was just able to watch as it went to overtime, which is perfect. And I got to see Kadri's goal, which is amazing. And I was saying to our friends Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt, I really felt like, you know, Colorado obviously will has outplayed Tampa.
Yeah.
But that game four was so critical, right? Because you said to yourself, you know, when you're really clearly the better team, but if Tampa can steal this, if Vasilevskiy stands in his head, they win it in overtime, Tampa must say, okay, here, we can do it again, right, boys? Right, best of three, and you're sure they have home ice, but we just came back against the Rangers down 2-0, et cetera. But that game four, in any playoff series, game four is always the one, right? If a team's up 3-0 and they win game four, it's a sweep. If it's 2-1 and you go up 3-1, massive. If it's 2-2, it's a completely different feel of the game. So I think of all the stats I looked at yesterday when I was doing my hockey shift, the fact that teams were down 3-1 are 1-35 in Stanley Cup Finals history. The lone team to come back, the 1942 Maple Leafs. Now, I know it's the Lightning. I know they're two-time Cup champions. But 1-35, like, that is atrocious. After Kadri's goal, a heroic effort by Kadri coming back from his thumb injury, which Ken Danico said to me, he would have normally been out for the regular season 3 or 4 more weeks.
Yeah.
And even early on, you saw a couple of those shots. Well, he had nothing on his shot. Slap shot from the point. Like, I think it's going about 30 miles an hour. Like, rough. But that last move, amazing. Nifty move. And Mike Kelly, our friend, called it Sergei Fedorov-esque. Love the comp. Fedorov, that kind of inside-out move, able to flick it past Vasilevskiy. Nobody knows it's in the net. As you know, shades of Kane against my Flyers back in 2010. Had a horrible game-winning goal in Game 6. The delayed reaction, but an amazing moment for the Avalanche. Really, really cool.
I don't like this thing to go off the rails immediately, but Logan's face is lighting up across from me. You want to take things here?
It's interesting that we got a couple of texts about this on the fan feedback line, and I couldn't not bring it up with you because, as you know, you're always good about retweeting and putting out some of the stuff we do with you on the station. And you were on the morning show earlier this week, and I saw the tweet pop up, and you know, Adnan Virk talks latest baseball headlines on Boomer in the Morning. That's a lie. Let's be honest. That was a lie. You talked about strip clubs in Montreal and a bunch of other things that didn't relate to baseball in the slightest with the morning show. I'm not sure we could go off the rails quite that far, but how exactly did you guys get to talking about that with the morning show crew earlier this week?
Well, this thing I always wonder, when you work at a station, how much of the other product do you sample? Meaning, when Will texted me a week ago and goes, hey, I heard your hit on Tuesday, some real hard-hitting stuff. And I started laughing.
It was unbelievable.
MLB Network and, yeah. Similarly, at MLB Network and NHL Network, there's only so much other programming I can watch. Generally, I do my shift, and then I go home, and I have other things, right? Kids, movies, et cetera. So you really can't watch a ton of your other coworkers. So it was funny when Will texted me that. I almost felt like, you know, Will is naturally living his life. He's got things to do. So it was a rare time that he heard me do that kind of a morning hit, and it was ridiculous. Now, to your point, Logan, this week was even more absurd. The fact that this time we really just kind of delved into, I mean, truly bizarre and one might say salacious subject matter, particularly at that morning. But it can all be laid at the hands of our friend Ryan Pinder, because Pinder was the one who first said he had just come back from a little sojourn, as they say, to Montreal. So the genesis of it was Pinder was talking about being in Montreal, having a boys' getaway, and then from there the conversation just went completely off the rails.
Well, and the one that I listened to, like I'm never really in my car or driving around at that hour, but I turned it on and Adam was on, so I kept it on. But like you just went through a list of baseball stadiums you've been to. I'm like, what? Really? Like this is what we're going to our baseball insider for? It was quite funny, but so not surprised that, you know, you went down the beaten path with those guys this week.
I was just surprised at how much expertise Adnan Virk had in Montreal strip clubs, to be honest. You think listing baseball stadiums is impressive? Well, when he lists his top 5 strip clubs in Montreal, you know he's an expert.
Well, it started to get funny when Pinder started bringing up, like, the Mount Rushmore, and I go, well, hey, I mean, let's just go ahead and put these in the quotations. Allegedly, rumored to be, so I've heard, Montreal, Miami, Atlanta, Las Vegas. Allegedly. I mean, we this is all reports indicate, right? This is not from first-hand experience.
Does your wife ever ask you what you talk about on your radio hits and you have to beat around the bush on that one?
Oh, my gosh. Like, oh, you're really hard in the analysis here, right? You're breaking down the Yankees' win streak? Yeah, so to speak. The funniest is when Boomer brought up the establishments in Vegas. I think, or in Miami, he goes, they really don't get going until 7 a.m. I said, okay, that sounds like someone speaking from way too much experience. That could not be a casual observation. 7 a.m., he happened to be in Miami at a place of ill repute, as they used to say back in the
day. Well, and it's funny you mention that, because that was a pre-COVID, what do they call it? Was it a sponsor's trip or a client's trip that the boys took out to Florida before COVID, Verk? Steinberg and Pinder and Boomer and all of them went out to Florida, and they caught a Panthers game and spent some time with the clients. And us here at the station were left to pick up the pieces of, we haven't seen Pat and it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or Pinder was supposed to do a radio hit at 1 and we've gotten his voicemail for the last 3 hours. So that's where the boys learned all their Miami information.
Well, that's good to know. Now, it's good intel for future. Now, they bring up the Miami trip. It's like in Goodfellas, right? When they say, let's feed that guy to the Lions. Like, hey, we're going to go down to Florida and take care of this thing. Whenever those guys use that expression, now that's code for when they were up to no good. But it's funny, of that group, like Steiny, it seems to me like he's, listen, I'm not saying he doesn't get after, but he seems like he's by the book. I would think Boomer, there's no chance he's completely unreliable. And Pinder's kind of trending in that direction, too. But if I was meeting with clients and I say, okay, at 3 o'clock, we're going to meet with you, and I had those three lined up, I'd say Steinberg most reliable to show, Pinder second, Boomer unreliable.
Yeah, I mean, Pinder, when it gets going, that guy right off the rails, no question about it. And
he sounded like he was still recovering from Montreal. Yeah, there's no question about that.
I think he forgets what water is when he does those trips. So,
And I'm sure, Will, he'll use the excuse, hey, listen, I'm just trying to hang out with the client.
That's what they want, right?
They want to get after it. So, hey, dude, I'm a crowd pleaser. Come on.
They went to a Kings game 1 year, and he was just in the cigar room the whole time. So I don't know what was going on there, but it's all good.
As long as it's the cigar room and not the champagne.
Yeah, exactly. Let's attempt to get this wagon back on the rails. But I guess, you know, maybe sticking to not mixing in any water. Like, have they began to plan the parade route in Manhattan? Like, what's going on there?
Oh, my God. I mean, last night's game was ridiculous, Will. I was watching, and I got the kids to bed, whatever, and I turned it on. It was 6-3 in the ninth. And I'd watched a bit of the NBA draft, but it was kind of confusing, I got to be honest, because I'm like, you know what? I just really haven't followed college basketball, so I don't know where these guys are, where they're going, et cetera. I knew there was two Canadians who were going to be picked in the top 10. My buddy had told me that, so I'm like, great. I said the Canadians got picked. The Knicks, I still don't understand what's going on. So I flip over and I watch the Yankees. Okay, 6-3 game. Let's see what happens here. Astros-Yankees, obviously big series. Two best teams in the American League. Anybody around me who's a Yankees fan, I keep saying, listen, enjoy it. They're great. But you got to go through Houston. That's the giant you have to slay. The Astros have beaten the Yankees the last three times in the playoffs, including, of course, in 2017 when the Astros went on to the World Series. So with all that as pretext, I watched last night. Okay, work a walk, sure. And Brian Presley's pitching. And the great Michael Kay even says to David Cohn, isn't there a Presley movie coming out? He's like, oh, yeah, Elvis in theaters now. It's great. Which, by the way, I can't wait to go watch Sunday night. So good the boys are up in their pop culture. And Aaron Hicks, 0-2 count, and he gets a fastball and just crushes it. And the reacts was great. If you haven't seen it, just Google Aaron Hicks' home run. It was a bat. It was kind of a bat toss and a bat flip, but he almost did that casual kind of like he wasn't over the top. It was like, rather than like scream and pump your fist, he went the other way. It was like the casual bat flip. And like, oh my God, finally. But he smokes it. 3-run home run, ties it. They got to bring in Ryan Stanek, who, if you've watched playoff baseball, you used to see him, that guy for the Astros, long hair, all the rest of it. And Aaron Judge is again the winning hit. And it's one of those wins that you go, man, there's something about this team. Like, you're down 6-3 in the ninth. You have no business winning that kind of a baseball game. And Hicks is one of the guys who has been much maligned. He looked really good. They signed him to that 7-year, $70 million contract. And he's looked really bad. He got hurt. He's been inconsistent. And like, if that guy starts doing something, another example is Joey Gallo. Like, again, he's hitting 180, 190, but if he gives you any sort of production, that's a bonus, because Judge is still on pace for 65 home runs, and Stanton is great, and LeMahieu has bounced back. And, like, here's the problem. Like, if you're an opposing pitcher, there's no weaknesses. I remember seeing my buddy Aaron Boone a few weeks ago when I called that Yankees game, and I said, you know, your catchers aren't giving you much offensively, but defensively they're amazing compared to Sanchez. And Boone said, but Trevino can hit. And he's right. Now that I look at the numbers, like, Trevino can hit. And as we all know, is with our loyalties to Toronto, Alejandro Kirk's going to be the starting catcher the way it's going as far as the All-Star game is concerned. You can't find many hitting catchers. So if Trevino can hit a little bit, along with Gallo, along with Hicks, and you're adding to the monsters that are Judge and Stanton, and don't forget LeMahieu, and Gleyber Torres appears to be a good hitter again, and Donaldson can play great defense. It's ridiculous, man. The Yankees are off to the third best start in the last 70 years, I believe, since 1930, of any team through 70 games. Third best record through 70 games going back to 1930. So to your point about as far as playing the parade route, they haven't started yet, but I think you give it a couple of weeks, I'll see some people outside my house saying, hey, let's just block this off for that Cadillac coming around the bend here in October.
Well, 52 wins in 70 games. They're on pace for 120 wins this season, which would be the most all-time. Of course, the 1906 Cubs, which we all remember very, very well, had 116 wins, and the 2001 Mariners also reached 116 wins, which leads me nicely into my next question, Adnan, and that is, when you're this dominant all year long, is there a worry about trying to maintain that level of success into October? Because, of course, both the 1906 Cubs and the 2001 Mariners did not win the World Series. So maybe a two-part question, A, on that, and B, this is a Yankee franchise that, you know, they've been criticized by their fans and, in fact, you know, crushed by their fans for not doing enough at the deadline in years past. Like, what are we expecting Brian Cashman to do next month, if anything?
Yeah, I do think you're right, Will. You do have to caution against overconfidence and that natural malaise which will come at some point in the season. Like, the baseball season is long for a good reason and has the natural ups and downs. So whenever the Yankees have their moment where they slow down a little bit, I think the key will be health. Right? The biggest thing I feel like when I look at this Yankees team is, if they lose a few games here and there, fine. But they can't afford Aaron Judge being sidelined indefinitely. I don't think they can afford Gerrit Cole either. Like, it's true that their starting pitching has been outstanding, and Tyone's been great, and Nestor Cortez in the signing conversation, Montgomery's been awesome, Severino's back. But again, you can't lose your horses. So I feel like the biggest thing for the Yankees is, no matter what, keep Judge healthy, keep Cole healthy, let's keep this train moving. And there will be a time we're going to have some ups and downs, but let's just ride it out. That 2000 team that won the World Series in the Subway Series, I remember in September, they were sub-500. And there was a few whispers like, oh, man, this team is so loaded. But you're going into the playoffs with a sub-500 record in that month. Watch out. How hard is it to flip the switch? And they were fine. They beat the Mets, obviously, in five games. So I think there's something to just being consistent. I think if I asked Aaron Boone, he'd say, rather than having this 15-game winning streak at home, I'd like to be that team that just keeps on winning series. Just keep taking 2-3, 3-4. Rather than have an insane streak and then have to suffer some 10-game losing streak. Everyone starts panicking and jumping off the rails and all the rest of it. But at the same time, I do think there's something psychological about beating a team like the Astros. I do think there's something important about winning those AL East games against the Yankees and against the Rays. I mean, the fact that they've won 15 straight at home, that's the fourth longest win streak at Yankee Stadium in franchise history. The record is 18, which was the original Yankee Stadium back in 1942. The fact the Astros, the first time they've lost a game in leading at the end of the eighth inning, they were 40-0 in that department. And the Yankees lead the majors in comeback wins and walk-off wins this year. So whenever that down point comes, and there will be someone they dip, they go, hey, boys, remember when the Astros were 40-0 after eight and we beat them? You know, we're the number one team when teams are down in walk-off wins, and they will use these moments to grind through and to keep them up when the down moment comes.
Of course, everyone is talking about the unbelievable season Aaron Judge is having, and rightly so. But this question continues to be there in the background. We certainly talk about him whenever we mention the Angels. But, Adnan, why don't we talk about Shohei Ohtani more? I mean, this guy had a ridiculous week. He broke Babe Ruth's records again. He had 8 RBI and 13 strikeouts in consecutive games. Like, this guy is – I don't care how about – how much or how many home runs Aaron Judge hits, it's a fabulous season. But no matter how you slice it, and maybe it's because, once again, they're a really bad baseball team, apparently. But we don't talk about Shohei Ohtani enough. We don't.
I couldn't agree more, Will. And those performances back-to-back were just outrageous. I took a closer look, and his pitching is virtually equivalent to last year in terms of his ERA. So he's right around on pace, 3.18, 3.28. But his strikeout rate is better, his walk rate is lower, and I believe he's allowing fewer home runs. So pitching, he's a little better than he was a year ago, but basically on pace. Now, offensively, you go, well, I know he's not as dominant as a year ago. That is true. But a year ago, 45 home runs. This year, he's still on pace for 34 home runs and 103 RBI. That's crazy when a guy is supposedly having something of a down season and is still going to put up 30 and 100 and is on pace to pitch more than he was last year. So 150 innings and let's say 180 strikeouts and additional offensive numbers. It's just mind-blowing. And if you look at the odds right now, and again, I'm not a gambler like my boy Cabby, but Aaron Judge is the favorite to win MVP. Second place is Shohei Ohtani. And I think you could put a few bucks right now on Ohtani because if he keeps doing what he's doing, well, if he won the MVP last year and he's the same pitching and only slightly declining offensively, I think he's still got a great chance of winning MVP. Again, if Aaron Judge hits 65 home runs and breaks Roger Maris's home run record and the Yankees are easily the best team in baseball, well, then Judge is going to win it going away, of course. But we can't lose sight of the fact just because the Angels have fallen apart and it now looks like they are not going to be a playoff team again, you can't take Ohtani for granted. And John Heyman, one of our MLB Network insiders, he put it very well. He said, as a hitter, he's like J.D. Martinez. I said, yeah. And he goes, now, as a pitcher, you could say he's like a notch below Gerrit Cole. I said, well, I wouldn't go that far, but okay, sure. He goes, well, Gerrit Cole makes $35 million a year. I'm like, yep. He goes, so let's suppose Ohtani is a $25 million a year pitcher. Right. J.D. Martinez makes $23 million as a hitter. That means Shohei Ohtani should make $48 million a year. I started laughing, but he's right. He said, if one guy makes this and one guy makes this, and he does both, how can his value not be higher? He's the best bargain in sports. His salary is $5 million. It's crazy. And he's under contract through the end of next season, which is at what point he will hit free agency and make a king's ransom. And I don't think it's a fait accompli he'll leave Los Angeles. He chose to go to the Angels because they vowed, we will let you pitch and hit. Not every team would be okay with that. So I don't think all of a sudden Ohtani hits the mark and goes, okay, I want $500 million, I'll go to the Yankees. Fine. But whoever's going to pay him is going to get a guy that they deserve. And if it's the Angels, get ready to back up the truck. You're already paying Rendon $35 million a year on a horrible contract. You're paying Trout the $424 million, which he deserves. He's the best player in baseball. But you could be paying conceivably, think about this, Ohtani, Trout, and Rendon, well over $100 million. Well over 100. If those guys are both 35, Ohtani gets 35, $110 million for three guys. That's the situation the Angels could be in. It's crazy.
Man, the Angels are just so poorly run. It's unbelievable. And you heard it here first, folks. Bet your mortgage on Ohtani to win the MVP. Adnan said it. So if Cabby was here, he'd be happy for me to say, bet your mortgage, Adnan, on Shohei Ohtani winning the MVP.
He'd go with the whole bet. We just want you to dip your toe in it, right?
That's right.
What's his expression? Dip your toe, give it
dip
a buck.
Toe.
Okay, sure.
Adnan Virk joins us this week on a Friday, usually on Thursdays, but this week on a Friday. Logan.
Adnan, how many times can you recall in your baseball watching life that you've seen someone ejected before the game even starts?
Yeah, I've never seen it before, Logan. It was an absolutely ridiculous scene to see because those moments are so benign. You're handing a lineup card. Like it reminds me of Seinfeld's famous joke why he loves the meeting at the mound and the fact when a pitcher gets taken out, the pitcher has to give him the ball. Like there's so many balls there, but the manager has to demand the pitcher give him that ball. Like, give me that ball. Okay. Like it's a moment that should be subtle and it's so odd to the untrained eye. Well, similarly, you can look at the lineup card that way. Like in today's day and age, I mean, you could just text the umpire. You could email him. Hey, here's the lineup. Okay, cool. But you have to go there and physically hand a lineup card and tell him what's going on. Okay. And normally it should just simply be a 10-20 second conversation. You know, the umps say, oh, good game yesterday, or bad game yesterday. Oh, well, you know, it happens. Okay, it's cool. Yeah, what did you guys go for dinner last night? Okay, yeah, Harbor 60, cool. I hit the keg later. Okay, cool. All right, have a good one. See ya. And how quickly he got tossed was amazing to me. Like, what could he – like, normally those conversations build up. If you were to take umbrage at the umpire, you would start it by saying, hey, fellas, I know you got a job to do. You guys work hard. But last time, we got bone on a couple of those calls, right? Like, hey, come on. I mean, I know we're not here to argue balls and strikes, but you got to help us out a little bit. And they go, oh, well, we disagree. I'm not really sure what you're saying, but okay, fine. But whatever he said, it was within 5 seconds. He must have walked in and gone, here's the lineup card. Don't screw us like he did yesterday. Boom, he gets run. Like, it was crazy to see. Just proof that baseball will give you something you've never seen after you think you've seen it all. Just bizarre.
Worthy of a 5-game suspension, you think?
No, that's the other part of it. Like, I would just love to hear some more information as to what exactly happened. I mean, this is why people get so frustrated with umpires because they, you know, they call it the ump show. Like, they seem to overreact and get overly emotional. So I'm the fan of, like, you know, when managers argue things and they get their money's worth, and, you know, you're like Lou Piniella or like Lloyd McClendon famously stealing the base and taking it with them. Like, you know, you're going to get by my buddy Booney when he went nuts. You know, my guys are savages, all the rest about it. If you're going to do it, you're going to do it. That seemed to me, again, the only word I could think of is it was so mild and so benign. I can't imagine what magic words he must have used to get run up and then get that kind of punishment. It was just bizarre.
Well, I liked how our boy Tim McAuliffe put it. You know, if Martinez gets 5 games for that, what kind of punishment does Doug Eddings get for his horrible performance behind the plate that night? I think that's always the most
point by Tim.
Yeah, that's always the most frustrating part for anybody in that, right? I mean, I follow an account on Twitter that studies umpire metrics, and I think they have the league average, Adnan, at 88% accuracy on strike calls. Eddings was at like 64% that game.
Oh, that is horrible. And listen, I know umpires, it's a tough job. You never get recognized. You know, the best job you can do is if nobody talks about you. So I understand that. But I didn't make you do it. You signed up to be an umpire. That's the job you want to be. That's what you want to be. And in today's world, there's greater accountability than ever. And in some ways, you are more heavily scrutinized. It is harder because there is this evaluation system. And just like a student taking a test, you can say, hey, you got a 90%, but you missed 5 critical calls late in the game. Or, yeah, you got a 75%, but, I mean, you were consistent in your inconsistency, right? You hear that from players all the time. They may not have been calling the strike zone the way that it should have been done, but I just knew I was going to get the high strike call all night, and away we go. Now, the whole concept of robot umps is interesting because I just think the umpires union is so strong, they will just fight that to the death. We do not want to have computers replacing human labor. And I think specifically the hitters would hate it. Like, I asked somebody, who do you think would hate it more? He goes, oh, the hitters, because the strikes will be a certain way. And generally speaking, you know, a hitter can feel like he can coax an umpire, right? He can work him a little bit. Like, if there's a low strike early in that bat, and you kind of whisper, like, oh, I'm not sure about that blue, or kind of give him a side look, maybe he'll get that call. With a robot up, you got no chance. Like, this is what it is. It's a strike zone. Go ahead and call it. So it's funny. As much frustration as there can be, and certainly I agree with Jays fans being upset with Doug Eddings, I don't necessarily know what the perfect solution is. And replay has in many ways saved the umpires. Because before, if you blew a call, you had to hear about it the next day. Now, if you blow a call, they just challenge it and they fix it. Okay, life goes on. No big deal.
I know that we loosely talked about it off the top, Adnan, but is the Stanley Cup getting handed out tonight? What's your gut feel?
Yeah, I think so. I was looking at the numbers. The Avalanche have only lost 3 or more straight games twice all season. I can't imagine now is the time for a 3-game losing streak. Ball Arena will be hyped up beyond all belief. I know Vasilevsky is capable of stealing a game. He's an all-world goaltender, but they just look fatigued. They look like they're out of gas. I thought Hedman had a great game 4. He's obviously a superstar defenseman. But I think collectively their offense looks like they got a little less juice. And what I've noticed with the Avalanche is their fourth line, too. I mean, the fact that second goal, the Cogniano goal, and Helm involved in there and Sturm with the tip, like they're just really fighting it. And you need to have those types of guys, right? If you look at the Red Wings way back in the day, the Chris Drapers, the Kirk Maltbys, the Darren McCartys, you always need to have your grinders along with your stars. And the Avalanche seem to have that right now. I think it was Rantanen's numbers I was looking at. He's got 8 assists so far in the Cup Final. The record is 9, which has been done 4 other times, including my boy Danny Briere back in 2010. And the fact that Landeskog has been the best forward in the entire series. Like, you talk about a guy who probably gets, you know, under praise because there's so much focus on McKinnon and Rantanen and others and Kadri. But Landeskog's right there. And I was looking at his face-off numbers. Were amazing. He's not even a true center. And yet, in the left circle, in the offensive zone, he's at like 67%. Like, it's amazing how good he is on the draws. So those are a few big reasons. Here's the big one, too. Colorado power play, 6-for-13 in the Stanley Cup Final. They've been a power play goal every game. Like, the Lightning literally can't take a penalty, because if they do, they're giving up a goal right away. Like, that's just going to happen. And the Lightning power play is like 1-for-14. They've been atrocious. So I know Vasilevsky's great, and I know you don't want to give Tampa a glimmer of hope, but I think because of that special team's advantage and the fact Makar is so special, there's only 4 defensemen that have won the Norris Trophy going back to 2000. And Hedman, by the way, is one of those guys back in 2020. Makar is going to be the 5th guy to do it. Avalanche win tonight.
I got a feel for Winnipeg Jet fans who were told no by Barry Trotz today.
surprising, right? I thought all along Trotz was the number one candidate, and he wanted to go to Winnipeg. So I think the other teams kind of felt that. Philadelphia, I believe, Trotz was the number one option, at least according to some people. Although I have heard some people in the room say, no, Tortorella is our guy no matter what. But it felt like Trotz was the number one choice for most teams. It felt like he was going to Winnipeg. Okay, who's the next best option? And I'm glad Philadelphia nagged Tortorella. But for Trotz to say no with Winnipeg, that was surprising to me. And yesterday, of course, the Paul Maurice news came down. And I've always liked Paul Maurice. Great with the Leafs when I covered them. He was always self-deprecating and funny. And he was saying that, you know, with regards to Florida, we interviewed him on the show. He said, with that team, we just look at them and go, listen, they're number one in goals for, and there's a lot of excitement, but you got to muddy it up sometimes. And my goal is to bring some defensive accountability and a grinding ability, and the fact that come playoff time, a certain type of hockey wins. So it's interesting how you've seen so many of these, like, younger – there was that push for younger guys, David Quinn, my boy Hackstall with Philly, then goes to Seattle, brutal. And now all of a sudden they've gone back to the vets. Give me Tortorella. Give me Pee-wee Paul Maurice. So I think it's interesting that it means that more teams feel like they're close. Give me a veteran voice that can push us over the top. And for Trotz and Winnipeg not to work out, that's surprising.
What do you got going on in Cinephile land now?
Well, I cannot wait to go see Elvis, which I'm going to go see Sunday night with my wife. I'm a big Elvis fan, and Baz Luhrmann, I mean, he's, as you know, Logan, a visual stylist. I mean, either you love his work or you hate it. But my wife's a huge Moulin Rouge fan. We saw the musical earlier this year on Broadway for her Valentine's Day. I liked his version of The Great Gatsby. I like Romeo and Juliet. And Elvis is Elvis, man. He's about as iconic as it gets. It's getting really good reviews. Austin Butler playing Elvis. Tom Hanks playing the Colonel. So look forward to definitely checking out that. As far as the latest episode of Cinephile, as I'm checking right now, I don't remember what the hell I talked about on Monday. I did something, though. I was talking about Jerry and Mark Dolarz. That's right. Bryan Cranston, Annette Bening new movie, which is available on Paramount Plus. It's based on the true story of a couple winning the lottery because they found out a hitch in the system. Basically, the more you buy, the better chance you'll win, which sounds often simplistic. But Windfall was the game. Cranston, I love. And that betting very good. So I reviewed that new movie here on Paramount Plus. And the late, great Philip Baker Hall passed away at the age of 90. I talked about a film he was in called Heart Eight. He started with Paul Thomas Anderson. You know it, Logan. Of course, he was in Boogie Nights, Magnolia. Mm-hmm. And for the casual fans like my brother, he was Bookman in Seinfeld. And he was also a doctor on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he was in the Larry David movie Clear History. Larry David said he is one of the funniest guys I've ever worked with. Philip Baker Hall passing away at the age of 90. Classic actor's actor.
Rainn Wilson from The Office is in that Bryan Cranston movie, correct?
Yes. Not a major role. Was hoping for a little more from Rain. Michael McKean is in the Went Well from Better Call Saul, Spinal Tap. Not a whole lot. But it's a nice, sweet film, but an older couple with a big heart.
Before we let you go, how did the Virk boys or the Virk family enjoy Lightyear?
Yes, I'll be reviewing Lightyear on next week's Cinephile. I took them on Tuesday. I mean, just outrageous prices, because at the time we went, the only theater that was available was the IMAX.
$7,000 for an adult. Unbelievable.
Oh, my God. It was insane. $81 for me and four boys.
Boy.
And then the slushies and popcorn, $31. $120 to go see Lightyear. Thank God Cinephile is just killing it right now with Meadowlark, so I can just, this massive salary I'm getting is paying off the price of IMAX tickets and slushies and popcorn. Good, not great, and it goes back to our essential point, no Tim Allen. Like, the fact, it was ridiculous. I had to look it up afterwards. They said, well, it's an origin story. But Tim Allen is the voice of Buzz Lightyear, the toy. This isn't the toy. This is the man. Like, nonsense. You got to get Tim Allen in there. Not nearly as good as the original Toy Story movies. That was Dad's opinion. Kids is always into it. To infinity and beyond. They enjoyed it, laughed, cried. Wasn't too long. They liked the cat, liked some of the supporting characters. But I thought for Pixar, a bit of a step down. Logan, did you see it?
I did. I didn't mind it. It took a minute to get into the non Tim Allen thing. I thought, yeah, it was. I think it was out there to, you know, look, you're feeding a bit off of the Toy Story love, going with a Buzz Lightyear origin story. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't bad. It wasn't groundbreaking or anything like that. I thought some of the visuals could have been a little bit better. They usually have a little bit more fun with that when they're talking about, you know, all these unique places that they kind of go and make these things happen. But yeah, you know, I would have loved some Tim Allen. I think it would have topped it off, but overall, not bad.
I'm with you. Not a bad kids movie, but not a great, especially the high bar that Pixar sets.
Yes. And good thing you, you have seven jobs to support your kids going to the movies once a month because apparently you're going to need the cash.
That's right.
Yeah, this is why I work so hard, just to go to the movies and pay for my cable. That's where most of the money goes. It's crazy.
The reviews have been terrible, Adnan, but any early reviews you've heard of The Man from Toronto?
Yeah, I heard it's terrible. It's exactly what I mean. Listen, I saw the Kevin Hart, Woody Harrelson as well, right? I mean, for the title alone, it's going to be fantastic. But I've heard it's awful. I don't know specifically why, but apparently it's got to be just... I mean, movies like that, you're looking for action comedy. You got to nail the whole action and the comedy. It's got to be like modern-day Lethal Weapon. If it doesn't work, it's going to be a mess. And so far, it does not sound encouraging.
27% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, yeah, not good. Not ideal. And we'll see if maybe we can mix that one in. Although the reviews tell me that I probably shouldn't waste my time with that movie. Adnan, fabulous stuff as always. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll talk to you next week, man. Appreciate it.
Will, Logan, thanks so much, boys. I look forward to your review of my hit with Boomer on Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. Just stay out of the strip clubs, right?
As long as it's as interesting as it was last week, we'll have no problem.
We'll try to clear it up.
There he is. Adnan Virk, every single week here on The Big Show. Usually joins us on a Thursday, but this week on a Friday. And he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. 13-time Consumer Choice Award winners for takeout or delivery. Call 403-248-3344 or dine in at Atlas Pizza tonight, 6060 Memorial Drive, Northeast. We will take a break when we come back. Logan's got your headlines, plus a conversation with Shai Davidi. More baseball and all things Blue Jays. We roll into Hour 3 on your Friday. This is Sportsnet 960 The Fan.